I believe that big member organizations should find ways to make their money off of companies and not off the members themselves. I think for so long, we've seen like these big organizations and groups and communities, they focus on making as much money as possible from the members and not focusing on like where else that money can come from. So it's the reason that we made Women in Sales completely free to all of our members. And it's the reason that we've had 3 years of content and ideas and engagement. And we have found ways to compensate the cost of those memberships via other companies in this space. So we're actually having companies who are showing up and saying, we want to invest back.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by The Juice. Our mission is to squeeze out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals to help you push your brand to the forefront of the industry. Let's raise a glass. Welcome back, everybody. I am thrilled to be joined by Alex Zien from Women in Sales, the chief executive officer of that community. This is the first time I've ever recorded a podcast with somebody I've also jumped out of a plane with. So maybe I'll leave that teaser and we can get into that story later. But Alex Zien, thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour. We're thrilled to have you here. Big fan of Women in Sales. Before we jump into the conversation today, I'd love to just hear a little bit about your background and your story of getting to Women in Sales before we get to the meat of the conversation.
Love it. Thanks for having me on. I too am a first-time podcaster with someone that I jumped out of an airplane with. So again, we'll just let that percolate off to the side. But my background is I started in tech sales over, I think, almost 15 years ago. It's scary to like say out loud, but I was an enterprise account executive for over 10 years. I focused primarily on tech startups and really loved sales. Ended up finding an opportunity to launch this community and felt like this was a space that I felt really passionate about. So I gave myself like different revenue targets. And I was like, if we hit X, then I'm going to go do it full time. And then we hit X and I didn't. And then we hit X again and I didn't. And then by the third time, I was like, if I don't jump off and just do this, it's never going to happen. And so finally went all in to be CEO of Women in Sales. And it's been an incredible journey since.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for taking the time out of your busy day to join us today. So let's start there with community, because I feel like it is very trendy to say, you know, event-led growth, partner-led growth, community-led growth. But I really feel like a good community is really an aggregation of a lot of those things, because there's events within the community. There's obviously partnerships within the community. You're literally like interacting with those members on a daily basis. What to you, when you're building a community into a business, like what was the kind of aha moment of like, this is something more than just a group of people? Like there's an opportunity here to turn this into something more real.
I think there were two aha moments on two different sides. The first one was the people, the community members, people started showing up. So we were hosting different conversations and events and creating materials and resources. And all of a sudden, people just showed up, and like a lot of people, and it was actually really surprising. And so that was kind of the first aha moment. I was like, people actually care about this. People want to participate in these events. There's something here. And then like the big aha moment, I think, happened when a corporate partner approached us for the first time and came with like a check and was like, we want to sponsor your community. We believe in the work that you're doing. And actually having them reiterate to me why they were choosing to partner with us, why they found our organization to be really relevant to the work they were doing. They had researched us heavily. And I just found that to be a huge moment where I was like, wow, now companies are also seeing the impact of this alongside the members. This is really cool. What does this become if you put all of it together and really double down on it?
That's really cool. I'm curious, did you, like, when your first corporate sponsor approached you, I assume you didn't have any like formal sponsorship package at that point. Did you just say yes and figure it out? Or did you like buy yourself some time to put something together?
Yeah, I mean, I had created some quasi partnership packages. I never saw an example of like what other people did. I didn't know like what other communities were doing as sponsorships. So I did like work on some numbers and try to create some things. And I think the most that we had agreed on was just like the dollar amount. And then we kind of backed into what the rest of it looked like. But a lot of it was really hodgepodge at the beginning. Like it was just figuring out what is most interesting to this company, what's most relevant. What is really fascinating is that hasn't changed. Like to today, we have companies reaching out to us for different reasons. Some of them have like a really heavy talent acquisition focus. Some of them have a really heavy demand gen focus. Some are really focused on actual like lead generation. And so even to this day, our partnerships, none of them are exactly the same. There's some kind of light nuance to each of them. And I think that's one of the benefits of being small and nimble is you can do things like that. But it also, you know, it creates challenges too. You have to manage all those things and make sure all those activities are getting done.
Yeah, that's similar to what happened at the Juice. I remember we hadn't really put together a beta program. Some people asked us about a beta program. And I was just kind of like, yeah, we have one of those. And then somebody, sure enough, was willing to pay to be a part of it. And I sat down with an engineer at the time and I was like, this is what I just sold. Can we build this? And fortunately, the answer was yes. But that was always like, that's one of the defining memories I have of building the Juice. Within the community right now, within all of your, I think you just passed 5,000 members, is that correct?
That's in just in Slack, but our community audience now is over 20,000. So we're growing really rapidly and it's been exciting.
Hell yeah. What are like the common themes or conversation topics? Like what is the community feeling right now kind of broadly as you are kind of overseeing all of the conversations happening in the group?
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool to see because the topics, this is not funny, but sometimes like when people would first approach women in sales, they'd be like, oh, do you guys just talk about women's troubles? And I was like, I don't know what women's troubles are, but no, like we're often talking about compensation, about top of funnel prospecting, about how to work a new book of business. We're sharing career opportunities. There's a lot of topics around like parenthood and motherhood that are going on. So these are really interesting conversations. We have spaces dedicated and organized so that people keep those to, you know, specific areas. But there's a lot of really hyper-tactical things that go on and advice that's given. We had a really good topic that went off yesterday that was just around like PTO and sales. Like, can you take PTO if you have a quota? Should you take PTO? And like, so honestly, it's something new every single week. And I think that's what keeps the engagement high. And I think that's what keeps people coming back, which is really cool.
Maybe an unfair question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I think women in tech has been an area where there's been a lot of opportunity for improvement. And then, you know, women in sales and women in sales and tech, kind of as you look at the state of women in sales, not just the community, but kind of broader, like industry wide, trending in the right direction. What opportunities are there for us as an industry, for us as leaders to better support or better grow that space? What should be top of mind for everybody else as they think about the women in sales community and kind of what you all stand for?
Yeah, it's a really tough question. And the honest answer is, I feel like the one thing that I owe to my community and to sales as a whole is to get some data behind some of this. I don't feel like there's enough data out there around women's compensation, specifically in sales, around promotion. And it's hard to get those like big surveys and get enough input. But that's one thing that I've been thinking a lot about is like, we really need more data behind this so we can use that data to arm these discussions. That said, I personally felt that pre kind of COVID, like core COVID times, I felt like we were on a really good, like a better trajectory. I feel like a lot of the work, a lot of the efforts were somewhat lost during that time. Like those were the first, you know, a lot of the like DEI groups, a lot of the ERG groups and ERG leaders were the first folks to be impacted when a lot of these changes happened. And I feel like we're still kind of trying to recover our foothold a little bit. So my honest answer is, I think there's still a lot of work to be done, and that's why I have a job, and I hope that there's a day in which I get pushed out of my job because we don't need this work anymore, but I don't think that day is coming up as quickly as we would hope is the honest answer.
Interesting. I appreciate that. It's a good answer. Eye-opening. This is the content cocktail hour, so I'm going to two questions here. One, what are you enjoying drinking nowadays? We always ask our guests that. I think I forgot to ask that at the top of that, but we'll start there, and then I've got a follow-up question as well.
So this is my new bougie thing. I only like fresh squeezed orange juice. This is like a new thing for me. I was at the airport last week for a retreat that I was at. And I heard some guy he got this orange juice glass and he was like, is this fresh squeezed? And the lady was like, no. And he's like, I can't drink this. And he put it back. And I kind of judged him for a second. I was like, I am that guy. We are the same. And so that's my new thing. I've been buying my oranges. I got a juicer at my office. So I've been doing my juices. So that's my new drink of choice.
That takes like a shit ton of oranges, doesn't it? Like to make like one cup of orange juice?
It does. But I swear the taste is significantly different. And now I've like to the point where even like my parents, I'm like, I went home and they didn't have fresh squeezed. And I was like, throw it away. We have to get you fresh squeezed. Yeah, that's the thing that I'm on. But it does take an enormous amount of oranges. So I do feel like if we lived not in Chicago, it'd be great to have like fresh ones. But now I just buy giant bags of them.
So the juice is literally worth the squeeze.
Juice is worth the squeeze. Like it tastes different. You have to try a glass of Tropicana and then you try a glass of fresh squeeze. Totally different experience.
I'm going to have to do this now. Okay, so that handles the cocktail portion of the content cocktail. All right, let's talk content. I feel like within a community, content sometimes means a lot of different things. It can mean everything from conversations within a community to events, sharing of templates, toolkits. How do you think about content within Women in Sales?
One of my favorite parts about our community is oftentimes our content strategy and content pieces are guided by community members. So we'll see a topic that comes up regularly. So one that came up a lot recently was around pay structure for parental leave and like, what do you do? What happens to quota? And so this question came up over and over again. We went and talked to one of our partners, QuotaPath, who's also on the juice. And they actually were the ones that went and rolled with this piece and interviewed members of our community to do it. Now that's a piece of content that we can give back to our community members. So we have this really cool like circle effect where a lot of times like a content piece will come about from just a conversation in Slack and then it snowballs into something different. We personally do use the juice as well. So what we've done is like create a content hub for women in sales. So we have all of our educational materials. We have a training program in there. We have all of our events that are coming up, our recordings, everything. So we do try to make it really easy for people to actually find the content and make sure that it's just centrally located. But a lot of those ideas have come directly from community members. And we always try to give credit where it's due and highlight as much as possible our community members' voices in those pieces too, which is a great brand building opportunity for them.
That's such a cool like flywheel effect of like community member-led content and like creating like quality content and giving it back to the community and sharing that. That's really cool. It's pretty powerful. I feel like it's very trendy. Again, I don't know, maybe I'm using that word too much, but like it's become like, yeah, trendy for companies who aren't communities, right? They sell software or some sort of service or good. They're trying to stand up a community though, like separately or like as part of their brand. I've seen it done, I feel like more often not well than well. Is that an opportunity for businesses, do you think? Or is that maybe trying to do too much, not to lead the witness?
Oh, this is a tough question. I think about this a lot. I never talk about it on LinkedIn because I'm like, I just feel like it opens up a different can of worms. But I think we need different terminology. I think that's like where I stand on this. I think that whether it's community, whether it's something else, I feel like there's, I guess in my mind, two factions. There's like corporate community and then member community, non-corporatized. And so I think those are two different things. And I think often we mush them together. The purpose for a lot of company-led communities is for like product-led growth and to provide a space for their actual users to connect, to potentially get new business opportunities. Often that's at like the core of what they're trying to do. And then there's like on top of that, you know, you are building and creating relationships and doing all the things. But the product is always going to be centered in a lot of that, or whatever the company is going to be centered in that. And you feel that. So why I think that's different is on the community side, the space that we're in, we're not underneath a big company logo. And so if someone wants to come to our community and talk about a really difficult topic, whether it's like harassment, whether it's pregnancy loss, whether it's like something really heavy, in my opinion, it's much easier. Those are not easy topics to talk about, but it would feel more organic to have that conversation in a community like ours than it would under kind of like a big corporate title. My TLDR is basically, I think we need different words for the two. They don't seem to me to be the same thing.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think that's a pretty clear like delineation between the two. I think you should talk about that on LinkedIn because I think you navigated that nicely. So you went from, you mentioned like enterprise sales, cool jobs, I don't know, challenging jobs, I'm sure, but like more traditional tech job to literally betting on yourself and starting this community and now doing that full time and leading the community. I know there's a lot of people, whether it's by choice or not by choice, kind of going out on their own right now and either doing their own kind of fractional services, consulting services, starting communities. What advice do you have for people that are either considering that switch or going through that switch in real time right now?
I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I'm not the best resource for these questions because I do feel like I waited longer than I needed to. And so in some ways, I kind of look back and I'm like, I probably could have done that a year or two sooner. But what I will say is if you're someone who knows that you want to go down this path, whether it's next year, whether it's 2 years from now, 3 years from now, it's worthwhile to figure out and create like a financial nest egg and just have that ready to go before you make the switch. So for me, I had money set aside. I set these revenue targets. I wanted to see the company get to X dollars in revenue in order for me to feel like I could make the jump as well. And so I don't think there's anything wrong. I think there's a lot of this philosophy going on right now where it's like, just jump ship and like do the thing and like just jump off the cliff and you'll find your wings and you'll start flapping. And I just don't necessarily subscribe to that. I think that there's a lot of validity in just actually launching something while you're working at something full time, if you're able to, if you're honest about it as well, so it doesn't kind of come back and cause you to get fired. And then seeing if you can build it up a little bit before you jump. Because for me, when I did finally go full time into this, it felt like this kind of trajectory versus like this, like a straight like drop downwards. So I would say definitely having a financial nest egg. You and I have talked about this. Like, it is a very different world working for yourself full time. There are so many benefits, like the flexibility, the ability to choose your own schedule, the ability to choose the projects you want to work on, the people that you want to work with. You get to have so much more say, and the wins feel so much bigger when they're yours. But there are challenges. You don't have a team. If something breaks, you got to figure it out. Most of us, when we go full time on our own, are not going to have a team of like 50 people right out the gates. Many of us are going to be doing this by ourselves or with like a couple of people behind us. And so just kind of being ready for that. And again, the money part, I think this is never talked about enough, but it is very different to go from getting a steady paycheck every 2 weeks to big peaks and little valleys. And so sometimes you'll have like a heavy hitting month and then nothing for a month and then like two heavy hitting months and then like a bad month again. Like it's so learning how to budget, learning how to allocate funds properly, learning what amount of money to set aside, navigating taxes. That's like a big one that gets people those first few years in business. They don't realize how heavy the taxes are as well. And so just preparing, doing some research, getting ready before you make that jump. I think there's a lot of good to that.
I agree. I love the idea of starting as a side hustle. And I think there's even something there for like people who have leaders who have employees with side hustles. I think sometimes side hustles are, I think a lot of times side hustles are looked at as a bad thing. I always like people with side hustles. Like, I always encourage them because I think you learn, like, it's just a way you're going to square the learning that somebody has. Brett, who was on our team previously, like, he's like one of the leading hobby hustle, like sports card podcasts, like in the world. Like, he's famous in the sports card community. He would probably once a month come back to us with something like, oh, I just did this with stacking slabs, was like his community, and it worked. And we'd be like, well, let's try it. Let's see what happens. So I don't know. I think businesses and leaders should also be more open to supporting their team and having side hustles.
Yeah, I will say too, on that same topic, I'm a big advocate, a big proponent of being really ultra transparent with your company. If you're going to have a side hustle, if you're interviewing for jobs and already have a side hustle, it's a lot easier to have that conversation. I know you're going to hear different philosophies on this. I know multiple people who have been fired because of this, where they tried to launch something. If you're going to be building in public, you either deal with the pain up front or you're going to deal with it later when you're already at the company or your company finds out. I'm just a big proponent of having that conversation. I've had to do it 2 times now. And both times I talked to the CEO, I let them know what I was building. I let them know like what I'm working on, what the why is, why it doesn't compete directly with the organization that I'm working for. Both CEOs, super supportive, super excited, happy for me to do this for the exact same reasons as you, where like, what can they learn from this? What marketing campaigns are working well? How do we kind of duplicate those efforts within those organizations too? So that's just my 2 cents on that. I've seen it go wrong more times than not.
It's very cool. Well, you maybe answered the last question we always like to ask our guests with your answer on that question. But what is one unpopular opinion you have as it pertains to, typically we say B2B marketing. I'll say B2B marketing or sales for this specific conversation.
Okay, I have one. I think it's unpopular or it's just counter to what we believe to be true. I believe that big member organizations should find ways to make their money off of companies and not off the members themselves. I think for so long, we've seen like these big organizations and groups and communities, they focus on making as much money as possible from the members and not focusing on like where else that money can come from. So I don't know, I might be in my own kind of corner on this one, but it's the reason that we made Women in Sales completely free to all of our members. And it's the reason that we've had 3 years of content and ideas and engagement. And we have found ways to compensate the cost of those memberships via other companies in this space. So we're actually having companies who are showing up and saying, we want to invest back. We want to help and be part of fixing what's wrong in our industry. And therefore, we are going to invest back into this organization. And because of that, these members aren't going to have any financial barriers.
And that ties back to, I think, your opinion earlier of like corporate community versus member-led community. Like, I feel like corporate community, it's always like thinly veiled. They're going to try to make money off the community at some point in a very different way than what you just explained. But so I think that's a opinion we should try to popularize. I like it.
Okay, cool. We should tell the story of the skydiving,
yes,
I feel like.
Yes, we absolutely should. Let's button that story up. So Alexine and I have crossed paths in the tech world now. But we actually go back, you said, almost 12, 13, 14 years ago, 15 years ago, which is terrifying. Alexine and I studied abroad in Australia together. We were both at Purdue University and studied abroad in Australia. And we both had the guts to go skydiving. Alexine, do you want to share? How many details do you want to share of the actual skydiving story?
We were on the same plane, weren't we? Or were you on the other plane?
We were on the same plane, I believe.
Okay. I was not well, like going up. What I will always remember is the plane was dead silent for the entire flight up to where they basically throw you out the door. Just dead silence. You could have heard a pin drop. And I feel like I did it to conquer my fear of heights. I don't have like a severe fear, but every once in a while, if I'm in like the corner of a building or something, I get a little uneasy. Personally, I don't think it helped me. Like, I am glad I did it. I'm so happy it's off the bucket list. And I felt sick the rest of the day and I was terrified. But I looked at your video. I will always remember your video because you were just like flowing through the clouds and you looked like happy as could be. And my video is just like sheer pain and shock and like fear. And so I feel like we had different experiences.
Well, two things I'll say. So same thing. I kind of did it to conquer a little bit of fear of like heights, but I'll always remember they said they've never brought somebody down in a plane. So it's like, yes, really the first step is like the scary part is just getting on the plane. And then I think you're right. Like, that's why it was so quiet to where we eventually jumped out. Because it's like, we all knew at that point there's no return. But speaking of my video, the story I always share from this experience is I originally was like, I'm not going to pay because, you know, we're broke college students to get the video. Then I was like, well, if I'm jumping out of a plane once in my life, I should probably video it. So like last minute I switched and I forget what it's called, but like we were strapped to somebody's back or chest or whatever, right? Like we had a partner, a professional skydiver with us. So I had this like, you know, I'm 6'2" tall, like I'm a pretty big guy. And they had this like mountain of a man that I was going to be strapped to. And then very last minute, I made the switch to video and they're like, oh, well, we got to switch who you're jumping with. I'm like, all right, great. No problem. Bring out the next person. And they brought out a woman who was maybe 5'8" tall and just like tiny, but she had the video like work. And so at the end of our video, they always say like, put your feet up and you're supposed to like slide. And I like put my feet up as best I could and I'm not flexible. And she was so far up my back from how she was strapped. We just like hit like a meteor going into the earth and like just stuck. There was no sliding, but that was a fun time.
That was a good time. I'm glad I did it. Last question is, are you going to be skydiving again in your life?
I'm like you. I've got no desire to do it again. Like, I don't want to tempt fate anymore. And we did it in a beautiful part of the world. So like my wife, she wants to go really bad. I'm like, I don't want to go skydive over Rushville, Indiana. I've done it over the coast of Australia. Like I'm going to not push my luck any more than that.
We're on the same page. We'll send our spouses and they can go skydive together.
There you go.
And you and I will have a cocktail somewhere.
I like it. That's my style. Well, cool. Alexine, if people do want to learn more about women in sales or learn more from you, what's the best way to do that?
So if you want to learn more about women in sales, we have a LinkedIn page under the same name. We use Slack as our main communication channel. So we're constantly sharing the link out to that. You can reach out to me personally at any time on LinkedIn. I am what some will call overly responsive. So you'll get responses at like 2 a.m. from me. So reach out to me directly and check out our page on The Juice too, because we have all of our cool content and resources and events and all the things listed there. So we got a few different places you can find us.
Love it. We will get all those links in the show notes to our audience, to our watchers, to our listeners. Thank you for joining us. Until next time, enjoy the content cocktail hour and we will all talk soon. Cheers. Thank you for joining the content cocktail hour powered by The Juice. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us on app.thejuicehq.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.